The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, June 10th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Boy, we noticed that's a little bit of smoke in the air as we came into the studio this morning. I think there's a little fire or a fire. I think it's under control now in St. Helena. Boy, I'll tell you, we really have to be careful and pay attention to what's going on our earth. Well, I have a very special guest this morning. Joining me on the phone will be Dr. Lauren Morimoto, a PhD. Dr. Morimoto is a professor at Sonoma State University in the kinesiology department. She's going to be talking with me today. She's going to be giving me an update on what's happening with the Sonoma State University students, their solidarity encampment for Gaza. I want to do a special shout out to Dr. Morimoto and also to Professor Ron Lopez, who helped organize and be able to do this interview, for supporting the students at Sonoma State. You know, sometimes I feel like a walking history book because I was so involved in the 70s with the Vietnam War, and I feel like this is kind of a deja vu, like it's almost happening all over again. And it's so important. It really is important that we support our students because they're standing up for the future. And you know, it's amazing when you think of all the accomplishments that the human race has made, and yet we still cannot figure a way to have peace on earth. You know, before I go on the air at Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and she gives a report on what's going on, especially particularly with Gaza and Israel. And it just breaks my heart to hear what's happening, particularly with the children. And I don't understand why there's not a ceasefire. I don't understand why they don't just stop. I don't understand why the United States is supporting this horror. It just doesn't make sense to me anymore. You know, it's time that we figure a way to have peace because it's getting us nowhere. In fact, we're having a crisis with our climate change, and the military's telling us that because of war, this is a problem also with the environment. So we really, really have to think about it. Well, I have three announcements today. The first announcement I'm going to make is a special happy birthday to my dear friend June Beshears. June just turned 60. Just an amazing that when you start thinking that your friends are starting to catch up to you. But happy, happy birthday, June. June is an activist in our community and a very, very dedicated woman to trying to make the world a better place. And I want to thank her publicly and personally for not only being such a great activist, but being such a great friend. And also, it's coming close. Here we are on the 10th. Here we are on the 10th of June, and we're looking at here Saturday, June 15th, and we're going to be enjoying the celebration of Juneteenth, which is going to be at the Martin Luther King Jr. Park at 1671 Headley Street in Santa Rosa, California. It's going to be happening from 10 to 6 p.m. And, you know, this is a free family event. And what's so exciting about it this year is, I can't believe it, we're going to have special entertainment by the San Francisco band Pride and Joy. As you can tell, I'm very excited. I'm on the committee that helps make this happen. We're also going to have all kinds of spoken word. We're going to have Zumba. We're going to have good food. African clothes are going to be on display. Just a wonderful, wonderful gathering. And this is the 54th event here in Santa Rosa. And as you know, in 2021, Juneteenth actually became a national holiday, and it'll be celebrated not this week, but next Wednesday. It'll be celebrated on the June 19th, was actually what Juneteenth is all about. It happened on June 19th. And it's really interesting. It's the oldest known celebration as the commemorating the end of slavery. In fact, right now, what they call Juneteenth, it's the second Independence Day, because it was the day that our African American brothers and sisters gained freedom. And, you know, when you look back on it, we're still struggling. They're still struggling. We still have issues. But, you know, we've come a long way. And when you start thinking about it, we've come a long way. We need to keep moving forward, not moving backwards. You know, and sometimes I feel that that's what happens to us. We jump ahead, and we start, you know, with the civil rights movement, with women's rights, and all these wonderful things that happened in the 70s. And all of a sudden, we're starting to move backwards. You know, and we have to ask ourselves, why aren't we moving backwards? Why aren't we moving forward? You know, instead of making things so absolute, you know, why not negotiate? Why not talk about different things? Why not bring things, you know, compromise? It's not all or nothing, and that's the way it feels. So the committee wants to invite everybody out to Henley Park on June 15th to enjoy and to celebrate Juneteenth. And, you know, what I believe is really important about the celebration is the integration of it. And the openness of inviting everybody to come on down, and the history of it, to celebrate a moment of freedom, to celebrate the time that suddenly maybe things were changed, or life, there was a new idea or something new happening. So it's really important that we celebrate with people on this very important holiday. So once again, that's going to be this Saturday, June 15th, at the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, and it's going to be happening from 10 to 6, and are also going to have basketball for the kids and a jumpy, and oh my God, it's just going to be a really fun time. And a shout out to Nancy Rogers and her team for all the wonderful things they're doing for the community and for doing this event every single year. And as being part of the committee, let me tell you something, it's a labor of love, because it's all volunteer. And a special thank you to all those sponsors. You know, I don't have the list, but I will have it next week. And then the second announcement I have, I think, or actually the third announcement, here is, I am so excited because the National Organization for Women, the Sonoma County chapter, is going to be hosting the California Conference right here in Sonoma County. And that's going to be happening August 10th. So mark your calendars. It's going to be happening at the Church of the Roses over by Montgomery Village, and there'll be much more information coming out. And I'll also have the president of California Now next month. They're going to be doing an interview, and she will talk all about the conference and what it's all about. But the most important thing, that folks mark it on their calendar, that they mark it on their calendar for August 10th, 2024. And right now, so far, I know Molly McGregor, who's one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Alliance, is going to be one of the speakers. Dr. Kim Hester Williams from Sonoma County is going to be one of the speakers. And also, these two women will also be on a panel. And I just arranged for one of our local heroes in my mind, which is Madonna Feather Cruz, is also going to be one of the speakers. So it's going to be very dynamic, and I'm going to be there. I'm going to be able to open up with the pledge, and there'll be boots, all kinds of things happening. So mark your calendars for August 10th, 2024, and make, you know, I love that. There, remember that old saying they used to say, be there or be square? Well, that's how I think about this conference, be there or be square. Well, I'm going to take a little sip of water here. I'll tell you, sometimes when you're on the air, your mouth just gets pretty dry. And then, like we do every single Monday morning, we do a little segment called Our History is Our Strength. Now, why do we do that? You know, I say this every single week, because our history is our strength. You know, I wrote a letter to the editor where I kind of did a plea that we need to sit down and start talking about ways to come to peace and ways to end war. And a woman responded. And how she responded was that she let me know every single war. And she also said that sometimes when it comes to war, that sometimes it's so evil that you have to stand up and you have to fight. And she made some very valid points, you know, that there's a lot of justification that comes out of war. But the point that I was trying to make is maybe we can prevent wars by looking at maybe what's happening in the country or what's going on in that particular situation that maybe we can improve. Why does the first thing have to be that we pick up the gun and we start killing each other? It doesn't make sense to me anymore. It really doesn't. And when we look at ourselves here, when I think to myself, when I sit down with Ken in the evening and we have dinner and how quiet it is and how peaceful it is, and I recognize this is what peace is all about, I ask myself, what is it in the human race that thinks that we have the right on any level or for any justification to disrupt so much and to destroy so much and to kill so many in this activity called war? I mean, it's time that we start thinking about it. You know, and people say, well, you sound like a socialist, or you sound like a communist, or you sound like a thisy or that. You know, I want to sound like a humanist, a person, a human being, a mother, you know, a grandmother, a great-grandmother who's concerned about the future of the children, who's concerned about the future of the planet. There's no label for that. We live on a planet. We live on a planet Earth. We all want our children to be safe. We all want our children to have a good life. And then we also want, my mother always used to say she wanted us to have a better experience, a better life than we had. And I think most parents want that. They always want to see improvement. Well, think about every parent across the globe. I mean, how are they any different than any one of us? So it's time that we really start thinking about what. We start thinking about peace. How do we do it? You know, there's a song, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me." Well, if it's going to begin with us, if it begins with us, then we speak out for it. If we become the peacemaker, we speak out for peace. Very, very, very important. And also to remember, I am was so influenced by that song by Ellen Burksdale, "By My Silence, I Give My Consent." That haunts me when things happen, because all of a sudden I say, wait a minute, by my silence, am I giving my consent to this? I have to speak out. You know, it kind of haunts me in a way. I don't know. I hope it doesn't do that to other people, but that's what it does to me. So let's see what's happening. Today is June 10th. Oh, this is a good day, a day to celebrate. This is when the Equal Pay was enacted to prohibit discrimination on account of sex in the payment of wages by employers engaged in commerce or in the production of goods or commerce. Well, we know it still happens, as there's not really equal pay. You know, you really have to watch that. But there was actually an enactment on June 10th, 1963, to assure a regulation. You know, that's what's so important about regulation. They assure that this is going to happen. Well, another thing I thought was very, very interesting, that on June 11th, 1913, which is about seven years before all women got the vote, the women in Illinois celebrated passage of a state woman suffrage bill allowing women to vote in presidential elections. Amazing. Allowed women to vote in presidential elections. I love that word, allow. It's not that it's their right as a free agent in a free country, but they're going to allow us to vote. Well, we have the right to vote, and we, thank God, finally got the right to vote in 1920. But this was, here we were on June 11th, 1913 in Illinois, where one of the first group of women were able to vote for president. Well, you know, here's another thing that happened on June 12th, and this is a happy birthday, 1892, and she made her transition in 1982. Wow, she was 90 years old. Djanna Barnes, she was an artist and journalist, and she was author of the book Nightwood. Well, it's very interesting when you see some of this historical stuff. You wonder, well, what was Nightwood? Well, Nightwood was a novel by the American author Georgine Barnes that was the first published by the House of Faber and Faber. It is one of the early prominent novels to portray explicit homosexuality between women, and such can be considered lesbian literature. And, you know, it's very interesting when you think about this book. You know, it was first, when did she do this? In 1936 is when it came out. And, if, you know, I mean, really, women just did not talk about that, even though it was going on. And I remember even in the women's movement in the 1970s when there was a huge lesbian movement because they wanted to have a voice, too. We all wanted to have a voice, and we all have a right to voice. And one of the things that I love about having a voice is freedom of choice rhymes with that. I have a voice because I have freedom of choice. And that was the whole thing about the women's movement. What brought with the whole thing about Roe versus Wade and about the whole lesbian movement, that we have a right to choose our lifestyle as long as we do no harm to anybody else. You know, if you don't like the way I live, don't live that way. You know what I'm saying? It's my choice. As long as I'm not hurting you, I'm not warring with you, I'm not stealing from you, what do you care? You know, it's so interesting. But I thought that was a very, very, very interesting bit of history, that this was a novel that finally came out, that finally said, hey, this is happening and this is real and we want it to be acknowledged. And then the last birthday was really interesting, especially because we're around Juneteenth, is Uncle Tom's Cabinet. You know, it's the birthday of Harriet Beecher Stowe, who brought forward really the horrors of slavery at the time. And she was a devoted abolitionist and really brought forward the idea and the thought and the demonstration of how horrific slavery really was. So happy birthday to her. And she was born June 14th, 1811, and she made her transition in 1896. And I have to tell you something, folks. When she wrote that book, when she really put herself out there, and she started an awareness in our country that was definitely needed. Well, that's a lot to think about. You know, a lot to chew on, and we're going to take a little musical break now. And I have a song, it's called Democracy, and it's sung by the Byrne Sister Band, and it's a 6-minute song. I don't want to play this the whole 6 minutes at one time, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to play it half at one point, and then we'll take a musical break in between the interview that I'm going to do, and then we'll play the other half. And I'm so honored and so excited to be interviewing Dr. Lauren Miyamoto, who's a professor at Sonoma State University in the Kinesiology Department. She's joining me on the phone, and she's here to give me an update on the students and what was happening at the Sonoma State University Solidarity Encampment for Gaza. And I just want to do a shout-out for all the professors that are supporting the students. It's so important. I remember way back when we were protesting Vietnam War, which proved to be a mistake. Robert McNamara even said it was a mistake. Students gave their life at Kent State, and I hope we don't have that happen at this time. So let's go ahead. Let's play the first half of Democracy, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Lauren Miyamoto.
It's coming. A hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square, and it's coming from the feel that it ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the U.S. It's coming through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol. From the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay. The brave, the bold, the battered, the heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming. sorrow in the streets, the holy places where the races meet. And from the homicidal bitching that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. From the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA. To the USA. Sail on, sail on. Oh, mighty ship of state. To the shore.
And we will play part two of that song and when we take our musical break. But democracy is definitely coming to the USA, and I think, believe that's what the students here across the United States are doing or standing up for. They're standing up for democracy, and they want an end to all these wars. Well, for you joining us, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And joining me on the phone this morning, and without further ado, I want to introduce Dr. Lauren Mamamoto, who is a PhD and a professor at kinesiology at Sonoma State University. Welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Hello. Thank you, Elaine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's just such an honor. And is it all right if I call you Lauren?
Oh, please. Yes.
And is it okay if I tell folks just a little bit about you?
Absolutely.
You know, I have to do a real shout out the fact that you are actually supporting the students at Sonoma State. It's such an honor to have you on the phone and to talk about what's going on and hopefully to get an update of it. And I'm trying to just get this one page open, and I just can't seem to do it. Sometimes the paper just sticks to it because. Oh, here we go. Okay, Dr. Lauren Mamamoto is a PhD and is the transdisciplinary approach to teaching and research in kinesiology. Her diverse education, she has a BA in dramatic art and history and an MA in education and a PhD in educational policy and leadership with a concomitant in black studies. And international experience shaped her interest in human movement from multiple perspectives. Wow, what a resume. Recently, she ran a narrative medicine pilot program and seeks to find to continue it in helping future health professionals understand how their identity has influenced their experience. Her research on race, ethnicity, and sports combined with her own experience as a woman of color with a disability underscores her commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion. Dr. Mamamoto also served as Sonoma State's Director of Diversity and Inclusive Excellence and coordinates the Sport and Social Justice Lecture Series. She's president of the Sonoma County Japanese American Citizens League, and she enjoys learning Japanese, crocheting, swimming, and watching ESPN. Well, that's quite a resume, and welcome, welcome. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you. That's a very, very generous intro. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, you do have a background. You are of Japanese origin, and I have to ask this question. Were there any of your family that was involved in the internment during the time of during World War II, or any background of that, or any did that have any influence on some of your activism?
You know, my family was in Hawaii, so they were not interned, but I, as a graduate student, I learned that there actually was a camp in Hawaii and that there were local folks who were taken to the mainland and interned. It was primarily reverends, teachers, language teachers, and things like that. So there were community leaders that were taken. My family were laborers, so they weren't part of that, but they did see some of their friends' parents who were teachers, for instance, get taken away. And so I think it has had an influence, even though I wasn't directly affected in terms of my family losing its property or having to deal with that shame. But overall, yeah, I think knowing that history, then also having uncles who fought in the 442 regiment and learning a little bit about the history there, this all Japanese American troop, primarily of West Coast soldiers, and how they were treated during the war and what they accomplished, kind of made me realize, even if not, again, directly affected, it's affected the people who raised me and who were in a community that had to watch this happen.
I think I can totally relate to what you're saying. It's like myself, you know, being brought up Jewish, you know, all of a sudden all this is happening, and you can't help but be affected. You know, I mean, you can't help but take it to heart and say, my goodness, what is going on here? Well, you know, I look at your resume and I look at all these things, and why kinesiology? I mean, what is it about kinesiology that was so attractive to you, and how does that work in with all your activism?
Well, it started originally, I started in kinesiology because I wanted to work for the NC2A and reform it. And when I first started graduate school, my advisor told me, you can't reform it. The NCAA is just this behemoth, and it's corrupt, and it's all about making money, and you're going to get frustrated. And so I ended up changing my focus a little bit to look more from a historical, sociological perspective at sport. But that was originally my intent. I was, like, idealistic and thinking, I'm going to go in, I'm going to get my PhD, I'm going to work for the NCAA, which governs college sport, and I'm going to clean it up, and I'm going to deal this and that, and then realize that that's probably not my path. But I think where it all comes together is this idea of somatic education. My advisor, Dr. Cy Kleinman, talked about mind-body integration and bringing the body back into school. And that's, I think, where I really got fired up once I started my grad studies.
Well, you know, that's interesting, the way you explain kinesiology. And I think sometimes what's happening to us right now in the culture is that our mind-body and all, we're kind of out of sync, if you know what I mean.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the way we even educate our students in kinesiology, most programs don't require movement classes anymore. And I'm like, we study human movement. How can we not have the students do movement classes? It's like getting a music degree and not having to take a music performance class ever. It makes no sense to me. So there is definitely this valorization of the mind and ignoring of the body, for sure.
So that's very, very interesting. Well, you know, what you're hearing is to kind of give us an update about what's happening with the students at Sonoma State. And from my own experience, because I went through all the protesting during the Vietnam era, and I know what happened with students, I think it's very brave of you to be able to stand up and support the students the way you are. What influences in your life do you think bring you to the point of where you see the importance of standing up for this particular time?
Probably the first influence would be my parents, who weren't necessarily activists in that I'm standing in front waving a sign and being vocal, but who always would ask questions of me and make me think, like, why do we do things this way? I remember my mother telling me early on, why do you call your teacher Mr. or Miss whatever, but you call the janitor Randy? And I was like, oh, I don't know, right? Like, why do we do that? And we continue that even at the university level. People generally will ask me, is it okay to call you Lauren? but they'll go to a staff person and just assume it's okay to call them by first name. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with calling people by first name, but just that some of us have a choice and others don't. And so I credit my parents with that. But my grandfather was a union leader back in Hawaii. And even though he wasn't educated beyond elementary school, that he was an active member of the ILWU and on Kauai. And that influenced me. Just, he didn't talk a lot about it in detail, and I wish he had. But just getting a sense of what he was fighting for made me understand that if you do not organize, if you worry about just individual level concerns, then you're not really going to be able to advance things for the collective.
Well, you know, it's interesting about your grandfather. My father was also a union man, and he had a lot of influence on me in that area. And one of the things that he said to me, he said, I never met a boss that ever gave you a raise without a struggle. And it seems like no matter what you, whenever you want to make a change, there's always some sort of struggle that happens. And it's really a phenomena that's amazing. Well, you know, as a professor, I know I talked to Ron Lopez a little bit about this. Do you hear any static on your end?
Well, static, there is tension, I would say. And there's definitely, I'm a full professor, so I don't have to worry about other colleagues evaluating me for my next promotion or if I'm going to be retained. But for junior faculty, there is a concern because there's that people will perceive the junior faculty, if they support vocally up front the students, that there'll be questions raised about, you know, what they're about or what their character is, things like that. So there is definitely tension, and I feel it even as a senior faculty member, where it's definitely raised questions on campus about whose voice gets heard. And I was sitting in an academic senate meeting, and then we got in a debate about whether what's happening in Gaza is a genocide or not. And I thought, I am not sitting here having this conversation right now, am I? And thought, even if the numbers have been grossly exaggerated about the number of casualties, it's still a lot of people who are not directly involved with Hamas being wiped out. And that's not okay. Can we, can't we agree on that? And I just found it fascinating that we were arguing about definitions of genocide, and things like that, and whether or not the president acted correctly to support our students. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. We're in higher ed. Surely we can understand the bigger picture. But, right, so even by saying this, I'm sure someone will go like, she doesn't know the history. She doesn't know this, that, and the other. And I'm saying, look, it's not just like my opinion about genocide. It's like several different organizations around the world are saying it. So it's not just me talking completely out of my butt.
Well, it's interesting because I wrote a letter to the editor. I think I sent you a copy of that. And what ended up happening is a woman responded by naming every single war there was and talking about the fact that that sometimes you have to fight evil. I guess you're talking about around Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. And, she made a good point, but the point that I think people forget is that even when you look at the history of the Holocaust, you see that there were issues that led up to that war and to that horror. And maybe if at some point there were discussions or there were people getting together and talking about it, maybe it could have been prevented. And I think what happens is we jump too fast to be violent. And I think that's what the big protest is about. When are we going to stop that? When are we going to stop responding this way?
Absolutely. And when people characterize what the students are doing as pro-Palestinian, that's part of it, but it's also pro-humanity and not an anti-war. And so this idea that it's somehow anti-Semitic is not an accurate depiction of who these students are or what they're fighting for. Are there anti-Semites within the movement nationwide? Undoubtedly. Just like there's probably anti-Semites everywhere. Just like there, you know, racially biased people everywhere. They exist, but that is not what this, at least our students at Sonoma State, are fighting for. They're saying, listen, nobody is denying what Hamas did was horrific and an act of terrorism and that it should be acted against. But saying, okay, is violence and continued violence the best way we're going to combat this? And that's all they're raising questions. And they're making a case for the people on the ground in Gaza and saying, we want to recognize their humanity. And please, like, as an institution, can we recognize it? And here are some of the ways we can do that.
And also protect our future as students. You know, because if it can happen over there, it can happen over here. You know, I mean, it's like as long as, you know, one person is not safe, we're all unsafe. You know, it comes down to that.
And part of our mission statement, Sonoma State, somewhere amongst the value statements and all this, is the Seawolf commitment about asking students to act with integrity, right, to be responsible and look at the spaces around them. We're supposed to be creating global citizens. And so we have this group of students who did that and did it in a really thoughtful, engaged way, and had an administrator and our former president, Mike Lee, coming to talk to them in a serious way and taking the voices of the students seriously. And it's been disheartening for the students to see what's happened since then, to watch this sudden, quick transition of suddenly Mike Lee's gone. And not only just gone, but almost trying to make him invisible.
Well, let's hold that thought. And I would like to come back. I want, if it's okay with you, Lauren, I will take another musical break, real short.
And sure, sure.
I'd like to go into that Sea Wolf. What did you call it? The Sea Wolf.
Sea Wolf commitment.
Yeah, the Sea Wolf commitment and how that really relates. So let's go ahead and take a musical break. We're going to take a musical break now, folks. We're going to play. We're going to play once again the second half of Democracy by the Burns Sisters Band. And we come back. We are going to continue our conversation with Dr. Lauren Miyamoto, who is a kinesiology professor at Sonoma State University. And we are doing an update on what's happening with the students on campus. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play the rest of that song.
Eric, go first. The cradle of the best and the worst. Because it's here they got the range and the machine. Spiritual thirst. And it's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
I'm sounding, if you know what I mean. I love
Yes. Let us sail on to peace. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And joining me on the phone is Dr. Lauren Miyamoto, who is a kinesiology professor from Sonoma State University, who's very involved in supporting the students in their effort to stand up against war and to come to a ceasefire and to start looking at what we're doing by supporting the effort in the Middle East. Well, welcome back, Lauren. Welcome back to Women's Spaces.
Thank you.
We were just talking about Dr. Mike Lee and what happened about that. I mean, I thought that was pretty much, I didn't quite understand that. I know that he gave the demand to the students, some of the demands where they did not want the university to invest in anything that had to do with that, with Israel, and to also do a ceasefire. And then they forced him to have a leave, and then he decided to resign. How did that impact, and also you were talking about the Seawolf commitment.
Well, so the Seawolf commitment came about in 2017, and it actually came from students who were responding to some of the things on campus and trying to think about how do we make an environment that's welcoming for everybody and truly inclusive. So the Seawolf commitment is four components. So, and I'm going to read it because I don't want to misquote it. But one is, as a Seawolf, I commit myself to the highest ethical standards. Integrity, I will conduct myself with integrity in my dealings with students, staff, and faculty. Respect, I will respect the rights and dignity of others. Excellence, I will strive for excellence in my academic work and relationships. And responsibility. I have the responsibility to conduct myself as an ethical member of my community. And our students, by standing up, are demonstrating these commitments about acting with integrity, of respecting the rights of others, not just those in our immediate area, and of taking responsibility as global citizens to understand that what happens, quote unquote, over there is not just over there. So I think they've really embodied what the Seawolf commitment is about, and we should be applauding them. And I hope that our administration can recognize, the new administration, whoever it's going to be, can recognize that these students negotiated and Mike Lee met with them in good faith, and they came to these agreements not just on a whim, but through discussion and understanding and being critical. So I'm really, really proud of our students and the way they approach this. They didn't destroy things. And conversely, I'm also pleased with Dr. Lee, with his administration, chose not to respond with violence, as we've seen on so many other campuses.
Well, I have to say something here because, you know, as an alumni from Sonoma State, I mean, I graduated in 1975 in the sociology department. I mean, the home of the, you know, of Dr. Carl Jensen, and, you know, the book that he put out. It was just amazing. But I have to say, it's just such a beautiful, beautiful document. And if this is what was the motivation for the students to support this document and to actually live it, what do you believe is the resistance? I mean, what is the issue? What's the fear around what's happening? Why isn't it supported? I don't understand then.
What a great question. And what happened, I think, this is just my opinion, is that when Mike Lee made some of those agreements, clearly they were aspirational. There's certain things we understand. Divestment isn't done at the individual campus level. The CSU system as a whole has its investment strategy. However, there are funds that are controlled at the local level. And so all that Mike Lee said we're going to do is we're going to look and see and look at where our investments are and to be transparent about whether or not we have any investments with companies that are profiting off this war in Gaza. And that apparently has made some people nervous. I think the one issue that seemed to get people fired up was the call for an academic boycott of Israel. And right away, a couple of local politicians chimed in and basically said the students were aligning with a Hamas-funded organization. And I was waiting for the CSU to push back and say, hey, local politician, you don't know what you're talking about. Have you come talk to our students? Do you know our students? But that didn't happen. Instead, I think the pressure, that academic boycott, got a lot of coverage internationally and nationally. And that's the thing people honed in on and characterized it in a really unfortunate way, where the act of boycotting academically is not unknown. We did that with South Africa. I was part of the anti-apartheid protests. We called for boycotts. There were sport boycotts. The Olympics didn't let South Africa and Rhodesia compete, for instance. And the idea was to create a culture where people understood that this is what's going on in South Africa. There's a system of apartheid. And though it comes down to individual athletes not being able to compete, it's a way to let the world know that we're saying this is not okay. This is not how we want to do business in the world of sport or academics or whatnot. But I think it was that academic boycott that gave people something to hone in on.
What would an academic boycott look like? What is that?
It would, for instance, we would not do an exchange program with an Israeli university that's funded by the state, let's say. First of all, we don't have any such relationships right now anyway. So it was more a matter of we will not pursue exchange programs with a university in Israel. We will not have scholars who are working or funded by the state of Israel coming to the campus to, let's say, be a Fulbright scholar or something like that. So that was something that made people nervous. And also we have this great Holocaust lecture series. And so sometimes scholars are brought in and people said, well, that would be a problem as well. I don't know enough of the details of who they bring in to speak to that. But that was what an academic boycott would look like. It's basically just saying, like when the state said, well, you can't use California, you can't travel to these other states because they're having certain anti-LGBTQ plus policies. That stopped now, by the way. That was a way to say, once again, we don't want our dollars to go to these institutions that are doing things that are infringing on the rights of other people.
Again, we're going back to this commitment on the Sea Wolf, which I think is amazing. I would like, if possible, if you could email me a copy of that Sea Wolf. I'd like to put it up on Women's Spaces, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
I think it's a very important thing. I wrote an interesting thing on power, you know, not having some responsibility. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. Well, you know, we're coming very quickly to the end of our segment, and I'd like you to, if you could give us an overview of where the students are right now and how people can support this action and how are people moving forward?
Well, where the students are now is a little bit in limbo. So our acting president, Nathan Evans, came in and basically said, listen, we have to revisit the agreement Mike Lee made with you all, which is basically code for we're not going to honor it as of right now. So things like letters to the editor that draw attention to the fact that there was an agreement and that the students still expect that agreement to be honored as much as is possible, that letters to the editor if there are people who are alumni of Sonoma State who contact the administration here or the Alumni Association and even say, hey, we're alumni of this place, and we have this Seawall commitment. We're proud of the institution we went to. My God, you know, there's a whole history of, we name our buildings after people who protested, you know, Ruben Salazar. Right?
Lauren, in 1975, I was very, very involved with women's studies and with Mecha and all the things that Dr. Marjorie Downing Wagner brought in.
Yes.
And I was actually one of the speakers at the graduation. She wanted students. We voted on the speaker of that year, who's going to be the speaker at the graduation. So my heart is there, you know, and Sonoma State has a reputation, at least when I came, of being a very progressive, open college. And also what I don't understand, too, is this whole idea of free speech and that they, people, students have a right to stand up. They have a right to have their grievances. That's what free speech is all about.
Yes, and they have tried to exercise it in ways that are respectful. That, for instance, at graduation, at commencement, they were doing a silent protest. And you may have seen the image in the Press Democrat of maybe 10 of our students surrounded by 10 police officers. And you're thinking, my God, the students didn't respond in a way that was negative. They didn't push back. They waited until the end of the ceremony to chant. And yet they got harassed. Not by our campus police. Our campus police are great, but by the sheriff's office and local police. And I'm thinking, wow, they are literally doing exactly what we hope our students do, speak up and respecting the commencement. And yet at the end, there was this contact with the police officers. And so that was hard on the students. They were very upset, and they felt by bringing the sheriff's department into the campus, and you know the history with the sheriff's department in the county, that it made them feel unsafe and unsafe to family. And what was heartbreaking for me is one of the students talked about standing next to a student who had one of the stoles for graduation from the undocumented, from the Dream Center, and she hid it because she saw that the sheriff's office was there. And there had been two stories that week about how the sheriff's office had colluded with ICE. And I thought, Jesus, we're making people afraid at their own commencement, and they have to hide who they are. And so the students were very, very traumatized by that. And they were hoping to continue being part of the negotiating team for this agreement, even as we knew it would have to morph and change. But it sounds like that's not even going to be the case now. It sounds like there's this open path forward where everybody on campus or whatever is going to get to chime in. And the students who were at that heart of that negotiation, I'm not sure what kind of voice they're going to have. So once again, I think for alumni and local community members to say, hey, Sonoma State, we like the Seawolf commitment. We like you have students that abide by it. Please empower them to continue to have their voice in these negotiations about how this university wants to respond to their demands for the ceasefire, you know, for divestment.
Ken is trying to ask me something about what are you trying to do?
We attended a commencement ceremony at Sonoma State University for our niece, and I noticed UC Davis police at the ceremony.
Oh, he was saying he noticed that there was a UC Davis police at the ceremony. I thought that was kind of interesting. Well, you know, Lauren, we have come to the end of our segment, and what I want to do is I want to just thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. And how can folks get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Do you have an email?
I do have an email. My email is my letter L smorimoto@gmail.com. And that's my personal email. And people can also reach out to me through my Sonoma State email. And that's fine as well. The students and the faculty and staff for Justice in Palestine are beginning to get some social media out.
Lauren, everything will be on Women's Spaces at www.womensspaces. We're just coming to the end of the segment. I'm sorry, I have to.
Oh, no, that's fine.
And anyway, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces and for sharing. And thank you so much for supporting the students. Anyway,
and thank you for the space to do that and to share what's happening. Really appreciate this time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. As I say at the end of every program, to remember, our children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. And our children are now standing up against violence, so please support them. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I look forward to being with you the next time.
So easy.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, June 10th, 2024.